I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. Today we're going to talk about the depiction of women in mainstream media. The movie Misrepresentation finds that girls get the message from an early age that their looks are what matter, and that the media reach today is unprecedented and much more pervasive than ever before. The filmmakers say media is shaping our children's brains, lives, and emotions. So what are the messages we're sending about women? Are girls sexualized at an earlier age? And what's the connection between media portrayals of women and their political and leadership roles, or lack thereof? Nearly 50 years after Betty Friedan published The Feminine Mystique, are we seeing a backlash against women? Just this month, several congresswomen walked out of a hearing on Capitol Hill about requiring health insurers to provide free contraceptives. The congresswomen, including D.C. Representative Eleanor Holmes Norton, left the room to protest the all-male composition of the panel and the refusal to accept testimony from one female witness. And, of course, the Oscar Awards were broadcast on Sunday. In 84 years, only four women have been nominated for Best Director, and only one has ever won. 77% of Academy voters are male. So should it surprise us that we judge women by the dresses and hairstyles they wear rather than by their achievements? Do we get the media we want? Or do we have the power to shift the conversation away from women as sex objects and an ideal of beauty that is literally impossible to achieve in real life? To talk about all of this and more today, we are joined by Regina Kulik-Scully. She is the executive producer of Misrepresentation. Welcome.
Thank you, Holly. Happy to be here.
And we're going to also be joined by phone by Meenakshi Gigi Durham. She is professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Iowa, and she's the author of The Lolita Effect, Why the Media Sexualize Young Girls and What You Can Do About It. We'll also be joined by Devanshi Patel, who is a sophomore at Stanford University and is active in women's leadership development there. Hello to both of you, Gigi and Devanshi.
Hi.
Hi, Holly.
Thank you for joining us. And we want to invite our listeners also to join the conversation. We're wondering, has media portrayal of women and girls affected you personally in any way? And what are ways to counterbalance the negative and hypersexualized images of women and girls in the media? If you're a parent, what are your hopes and fears about the messages your kids, boys and girls, are receiving? And what do you remember about the gender messages you got through media when you were a kid? You can join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. Again, that's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let me start with you, Regina. You produced this film, Misrepresentation. How did you get involved, and how has it framed, you know, how you look at the world after making this film?
Well, first of all, thank you for watching the film, too, Holly. I know that you saw it. You have a 12-year-old daughter, and we always like to say we made this film for your daughter.
Thank you.
And hello, Gigi and Devanshi.
Hi.
Hello to you both. And also on behalf of Jennifer Siebel Newsom, whose brainchild this film was, I'm really happy to be here. She's on the road talking about this film. She's at school. I mean, every day this week she's at different schools speaking about this film. So we're very proud of it, and I was part of a team that helped put this out there into the world to do its work. And when Jennifer came to me with this idea, she had spent time in Hollywood and also married to Mayor Gavin Newsom at the time of San Francisco.
And just had a baby, right? That sparked it.
Well, she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. She became pregnant with this, with her baby. And now her daughter, Montana Tessa, who's my godchild. She's so amazing. Anyway, she knew, you know, she was disturbed. It starts with feeling disturbed. And you know, when you see the film, you walk away saying, I don't feel good with what I just saw. So she was disturbed and she was concerned, and then knowing that she was bringing a daughter into the world. And I have a history, too, of working in a field of empowering women, women's issues. I started a foundation called Career Peaks for Young Women. My PR agency in Manhattan is called RPR Marketing Communications, and that also deals with a lot of, you know, building brands and images around women. So I, too, have always had this, you know, in my background and wanting to empower women. So we came together, and she's in her 30s, I'm in my 40s, and this is just a passionate topic of both of ours, and she wanted to do a film on this issue of why women are portrayed the way they are and how it was leading to young women not feeling good about themselves. And so we just literally walking and talking, dialogues, just women talking to each other and having great ideas and sharing them and collaboration. And Jennifer is I always call her the master collaborator. And she just said, I want to work with a team of people and put this film together. And so she basically really inspired me, and I did back her to begin the film. And then it became a runaway trade.
Let's move to you, Gigi. Let me bring you into this. It talks about how much media children are consuming these days, and that it's much more. What's changed from 10, 15, or 20 years ago?
The statistics are really, quite a lot has changed, actually. I mean, the statistics about how much media kids consume have risen astronomically in the past 20 years. At the moment, on a typical day, a young person is faced with a media environment that includes more than 200 cable television networks, 5,500 consumer magazine titles, 10,500 radio stations, and 30 million or more websites. We know that American teenagers, according to the marketing firm Teen Research Unlimited, spend 11.2 hours a week watching TV, 10.1 hours listening to FM radio, 3.1 hours a week playing video games, 16.7 hours a week online. So, you know, they just live in a media-saturated environment, which is, the number of media outlets and the range are just, hugely more than they were 20 years ago. Also, studies indicate that the sexual content in media aimed at children and adolescents has risen exponentially in the last 20 years. There's a lot going on that's very different from the way it used to be.
Gigi, though, I mean, objectification of women has been around for a long time now, right? I remember it from my own childhood. What can you give us some specific examples of what you think has actually changed?
As I'm saying, the amount of sexual content in media has changed, and most of it is, there have been a lot of studies done on this, and including my own, and a great deal points to the idea that sex is portrayed in ways that present it as, glamorous and fun and exciting, with very little attention being paid to sexual health or to sort of the rights and responsibilities that kids have in terms of sex. The objectification has increased. Some of the studies that you see about, for example, the way bodies are portrayed, they've become more and more unrealistic, the portrayals of female bodies and what constitutes ideal female sexuality. The bodies are very thin, yet voluptuous, yet muscular, right? So they've sort of reached the standard of artifice that is almost impossible to attain. And if you look back at the idols of the past, like Marilyn Monroe and Ava Gardner, these were adult women with much more realistic bodies. So there's all of that going on.
And what are the consequences of this? Let me ask both you, Gigi, and Regina. What are we seeing as some of the effects?
Well, I'll just jump in for one. Gigi, those statistics are staggering, and they're even more than, they're growing.
Yeah.
And I think when people say, it really isn't that bad or it's gotten better, we look to these statistics, the fact that eating disorders are on the rise, the numbers, and Gigi, correct me if I'm wrong, the numbers of eating, young women in high school and college, they're getting younger and younger, that they're exponential, and it's disturbing, the cutting. The anxiety disorders, the rise in prescription drugs in colleges, they have an epidemic of prescription drugs right now for anxiety and eating disorders. They can't even keep up with it. So we know that something's wrong. And when we look at the media, there's a steady diet of sex and violence going on. So there is a correlation. There's no way to separate the two.
There's a correlation. I'll just add to that in terms of the data. I mean, there have been studies done on this for at least the past 20 years, but some of them are very recent. And for example, in a 2002 study, seventh grade girls who viewed idealized magazine images of women reported a drop in body satisfaction and a rise in depression. In a 2005 study, young women were shown to have greater appearance anxiety after viewing media images of idealized women's bodies. In 2007, there was a report from the American Psychological Association Task Force on the Sexualization of Girls that had lots of convincing data about how these images are in fact impacting girls. So we have good
that's right.
Information.
Let me play a clip from Misrepresentation, and this is some girls talking about what we're talking about right now.
We see so much in the media that there's so much negativity towards women and their weight and how they look, and it's just a representation of the pressure we feel to conform to men's ideals. There's this concept of the perfect woman who looks this certain way, and because women may not look that way, they're scrutinized.
I remember fifth grade, I was worrying about my weight, and now I'm in ninth grade, I'm still worrying about my weight.
Me being a small person, like at my old school, I was told to like go throw up or like go eat a hamburger because people thought I was like anorexic or something, so I would like eat a lot so that people would think that I didn't have an eating disorder.
I straighten my hair just so I can fit in when I have naturally curly hair.
I have like close friends that like in between like break periods, they will go to the bathroom and put on like 10 pounds of makeup and, you know, comb their hair and do all this, you know, pampering, you know, and you're at school to learn.
When is it going to be enough? Because, you know, I have a younger sister and like she's like, like she herself, you know, like she cuts herself because like she gets teased on school because she doesn't have the perfect body, and it's like it's hard for me to see that. So it's like, what can I do so my little sister won't be getting hurt by the media? You know, like how long is it gonna take for somebody to take a stand?
That was a clip from the movie Misrepresentation, and it's very powerful. It's young women talking about this and asking the question, when is somebody going to take a stand? So, Devanshi, let me bring you into this. What kind of a stand are you taking? I know you're involved in leadership development at Stanford.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me on here. Hi, Regina, and hi, Professor Durham. So, currently I'm on staff at the Women's Community Center at Stanford, where I go to school. And a lot of our work focuses on raising these issues and bringing them back into the limelight, kind of in the way that misrepresentation does. As you mentioned, these are age-old problems, and the problem is that they're only getting worse. So we need to make them prominent before we do anything to stop them, and that's the only way that we're going to stop them is for people to realize the gravity of these problems, the gravity of the fact that, you know, so many women are bombarded with images constantly, just telling us that we're not good enough, we're not smart enough, we're not beautiful enough. And one way we're doing that is to really, I am planning a conference at our school, and one way we're really channeling development or channeling leadership development is to bring in women from across different industries and across different sectors who are doing great work, and to show that, you know, you can be successful in whatever you do as long as you're willing to put yourself out there. And like Regina kind of talked about, she's done a lot of great work with women's leadership development as well. One thing we've noticed on the university campus is that a very, very large number of women are involved in extracurricular activities, are involved in their student groups, but most often don't take the roles in university-wide leadership. So this is not only true at our campus, but there was a report put out by Princeton University last year that kind of analyzed the way that women respond to different triggers of leadership. So women on the college level are more likely to head up student groups or individual groups or sororities or different community service organizations, but not necessarily university-wide leadership. At Stanford in the last 6 years, we've only had one young woman be our executive in our student government. And this is often mirrored in the way that universities have a very low population or low percentage of women who are tenured faculty. At Stanford, it's only 25%. So we kind of have to step back and see how these kind of discrepancies perpetuate at the college level. Who is really teaching us when 25% of those faculty are women and even fewer in the sciences and engineering departments? What kind of message are we getting, especially what kind of message are women getting for their ability to pursue unconventional subjects like sciences and engineering?
Yeah. Hey, Devanshi, it sounds like your line is a little rough, so we're going to actually try and see if we can fix that and get you back on. So hold on for a moment. She brought up this whole idea of the power of modeling, that who we see is who we believe we might be able to be for the most part. And if we're invisible or portrayed in limited ways, that may be that, you know, as Marion Wright Edelman said, you can't be what you can't see. Mm-hmm.
That's right. This is Regina again. I think it's so powerful what Devanshi said. I mean, we are known for our collaborative power, and it's beautiful. And in fact, we have to do more and more of that instead of working in silos. That's one of the things misrepresentation.org is really promoting, is women combining their talents and alliances, and we're saying, you know, get online, go to misrepresentation.org, take our pledge, be on our mailing list, get the daily, weekly, monthly mailings that we send out. It encourages women to actually go in and take positions of leadership. It's great to be collaborative, but many times women don't think, I don't need to be just a part of the group. I actually can lead the group. We just don't, it's not our natural inclination. So that's a very powerful thing, too. And we're also a very big push at misrepresentation.org is that we are encouraging women to mentor other women. Bring others up. Bring others up. Reach out. Look for role models yourself. It's not a crime not to know or not to, you know, but if you see someone who has something remotely that you want to learn or do, look around, investigate. We have all the resources now at our fingertips with technology. Make the ask, you know, and learn, and then do the same for others. We have to raise the consciousness of ourselves, and we have to raise the consciousness of others. That is part of our responsibility.
Well, I'd like to bring up that question of sort of politics and leadership. You know, women are now the majority on college campuses, and I'm wondering if there's a sort of backlash to this growing power of women. And at the same time, the only 17% of congressional representatives are women. I believe that's the lowest number of women representatives in Congress in the last 30 years. So right. What's happening?
Well, you also see, it's so interesting you're bringing this up, Holly, politically, because, and Jennifer has, Siebel Newsom has just sent out a very powerful missive. Please, everyone, go to misrepresentation.org and take the pledge, because you will become part of this conversation and this dialogue, and it's crucial. And we're doing the research for you so we can plug you in instantaneously so that you can take action. We've also give action steps on what you can do to combat this. And this very point you're bringing up, Jennifer's saying we are the lowest we've ever had in representation. And not only that, we have people attacking, people within our government attacking the women in our government. You know, the evangelicals or the far right, and, you know, they're going after the women representatives we have for their trying to not only push our rights forward, but even maintain the rights that we fought so hard to have right now. They're trying to roll back our rights. So women no longer have the luxury of sitting back and saying, oh, well, the other people are doing the work. No. You have to step forward and become part of the conversation, become part of the dialogue, and help protect the women who are out there fighting for us, too.
I want to play another clip from Misrepresentation, and we have Devanshi back on the line. You know, not just actresses and models, but female politicians, female journalists, news anchors are sexualized.
Exactly.
We talk about, you know, what Hillary Clinton is wearing. So let's play a clip from Misrepresentation, and this is how women are portrayed in the news.
Both you and Sarah Palin are good-looking women. I mean, you're attractive, young, relatively young women.
Kagan, he's going to put on the U.S. Supreme Court. Isn't there such a thing about the aesthetics of the appointee? Let's put it to you this way. She's not the type of face you'd want to see on a $5 bill.
I think I'm going to send Sotomayor and her club a bunch of vacuum cleaners to help them clean up after their meetings.
Cynthia McKinney, the former congresswoman from Georgia, was another angry black woman.
Look at these ugly skanks who make up the female leadership of the Democratic Party.
Do you know that ugly hag, Madeleine Albright? Remember her? A psycho. She was the Secretary of State under Clinton. Remember, like a fat moron?
And now we have the Wicked Witch of the West, you know, Nancy Pelosi.
I think if Speaker Pelosi were still capable of human facial expression, we'd see she'd be embarrassed.
Nancy Pelosi, get another facelift, lady. Another reason why it's very rare to find a woman worthy of serving in political office.
Ding dong, the Wicked Witch.
And it's bye-bye Pelosi.
And Hillary Rotten Clinton, her thinness, is no better than Dumbo with the big ears.
When she raises her voice, and when a lot of women do, you know, it's as I say, it reaches a point where every husband in America is heard at one time or another.
You get a woman in the Oval Office, most powerful person in the world, what's the downside?
You mean besides the PMS and the mood swings?
That's a clip from Misrepresentation of how female politicians and leaders, people in great positions of power, are portrayed in some media outlets. And a listener called to tell us about a Media Matters for America article that said they looked at the guests interviewed on the Sunday shows for the month of February, 52 men, 4 women. So let me get some comments from you. Let's start with you, Gigi.
Well, I mean, even, you know, aside from the numbers are telling, of course, that there are so few women even considered for interviews on serious political shows. But also, I just wanted to add that the clip that you played, if you listen to it carefully, the emphasis is so much on the women's appearance, right? You wouldn't want to see a face like that on a $5 bill, you know, whatever, Wicked Witch of the West. And I mean, just there's so much emphasis on the way they look. And part of the backlash that you were talking about is, again, this incredible sort of emphasis on a particular, you know, embodying a particular type of sort of sexuality or hotness or desirability without which a woman just can't even be sort of credible in any way. So it seems to me that as women are moving more and more into the forefront, I mean, we are seeing at least, you know, more women running for office and, you know, sort of as you're saying, you know, increasing numbers of women on college campuses, in the professional workforce and so on. You know, that's at the same time, it's being paralleled by this in escalation of the unrealistic, you know, beauty and desirability standard for women. And so it seems to me that just that is part of the whole backlash, is sort of, you know, emphasizing hotness in a woman in a particular way, to the point where everything else is devalued, their intelligence, their artistic ability, you know, political potential, community activism, whatever it is, none of that is as important as you know, meeting
what they're looking
ideal.
Like. Yeah. Regina's nodding her head here furiously.
Agreeing with you, G. No, it is absolutely remarkable to see, as women are gaining economic power. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about that. Women are earning more. We are the number one business owners. We're starting businesses every day. And as we gain more economic power, not just political rights, but our economic power is on the rise. It's almost like the other half of our population is trying to make us contract.
Yeah.
And so they, as we get more and more economically powerful and politically powerful, they try to marginalize us and reduce us to the length of our hair, to the number of wrinkles on our face, and to the number of pounds on our bones.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally a direct ratio going on. It's fascinating. And you're right. There wasn't one comment in that little composition of radio clips that you had that they spoke to any political decisions those women have made, to their intellect, to their educational backgrounds.
Right.
I mean, we are going head to head, if not past, a lot of our male counterpoints in a lot of these areas, and there's no discussion on that. There's no discussion on Kagan or Sotomayor's, you know, political or
merits.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Mm-hmm.
It is fascinating, which is why I wonder if there's something here that's a backlash.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. Today we're speaking with Regina Kulik-Scully. She's the executive producer of the movie Misrepresentation. You just heard from her. We're also joined by Meenakshi Gigi Durham. She's a professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Iowa. She's also the author of The Lolita Effect, Why the Media Sexualize Young Girls and What You Can Do About It. Devanshi Patel is also joining us. She's a sophomore at Stanford University, and she's involved with women's leadership development at that institution. And we're talking this hour about how women are portrayed in media, from advertising to film to news to politics. We're asking if we're teaching our children to objectify women, and we want to make sure that we start talking about boys in the second half of this show. We also really want to hear from you. How has the media portrayal of women and girls affected you personally? What do you watch and read? What do you boycott? And what do you remember about gender messages you got through media when you were a kid? If you're a parent, what are your hopes and fears about the messages your kids are receiving? I'll give the number out when we come back from a short break. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this break.
And you're listening to Your Call on KALW San Francisco, where we have been broadcasting at 91.7 since 1941. With online listening, we have listeners worldwide. So just because you live in the Bay Area doesn't mean KALW's online streams aren't for you. If you hear KALW at work but not at home, or lose reception on your commute, check out the online listening options at kalw.org. And thank you for listening to and supporting your local public radio station, KALW, San Francisco.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. And I promised to give out the number right after the break, so let me tell you, you can join our conversation by calling 1-866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can also send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about how the Occupy movement is radicalizing college campuses and beyond. We'll talk about how global events are inspiring political action. And we'll ask what historical or recent event encouraged you to get politically involved. Friday, of course, is our media roundtable, the day we speak with journalists about the week's news coverage. Today, we're talking about how should we respond to the hypersexualization of women and girls in media. We're talking with the makers of the film Misrepresentation. It's a documentary about the increasingly sexualized and objectified portrayals of women and girls in popular culture and news media, and the continued absence of women in critical leadership roles. So how are these trends affecting our society, and especially our young people, boys and girls? How do they impact you or those around you, and how can we shift this conversation to something that's more inclusive of a wider range of perspectives? You can join us at 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. And I apologize, we've got a full bank of lines, but they'll be opening up soon. So take down the number, 866-798-8255. And if you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also continue the conversation by posting a comment at our new website. It's yourcallradio.org. And we're going to get to your calls right in just a moment. We're talking with Regina Kulik-Scully. She's executive producer of Misrepresentation. Meenakshi Gigi Durham is professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Iowa. She's also the author of The Lolita Effect, Why the Media Sexualize Young Girls and What You Can Do About It. And we're also talking with Devanshi Patel, who's a sophomore at Stanford University. We'll go to our calls in just a minute. Regina, I wanted to bring up something that we were talking about, but only tangentially, which is the money. So sex sells, obviously. But who's making the money and who's trying to change the conversation? And you're particularly interesting to talk to about this because you actually work within the beauty industry as a consultant, right?
I do. I've worked for the top beauty companies in our country, and I have a PR agency that deals with that. And so I've been in many boardrooms and many marketing meetings. And what's interesting is most of the men make those decisions. But what's powerful about what we're talking about now is that women make up 86% of the consumers. And we are a firm opinion that, yes, we can change things politically and we have to be pursuing that, but economically is one of the most powerful ways we can make our mark and vote. We vote with our dollars in our wallet, and we can literally take out a product, a TV, a movie, a cereal. We can take them out if women and men unite, because women are part of this. Believe me, there are many dads who are passionate after seeing this film. We're interested in getting the dads, the uncles, the brothers, everybody. And you brought up a good point about changing the conversation. One of the best ways we can do that, Holly, is through education. And we have a remarkable program right now, and we have a curriculum, the DVD that has the curriculum, ages K through 12, age appropriate, of course. And we're really trying to get people to get this into their schools. We're in over 1,500 schools right now. We want to be in 50,000 schools across the country. We're in 10 different countries, and we intend to be throughout the world. This is a global issue. It's not just in our own country.
And we'll put a link to all of this information at yourcallradio.org.
Yes, and you can certainly get copies of the DVD and the curriculum on misrepresentation.org. But it's imperative, in order to change the conversation, people must raise their consciousness. We've become desensitized to this issue. Until we see it all compiled up on the screen, it's like we've devoured a box of Twinkies and we don't know why we feel sick. Because it's all up there, right? Like, yep. A Twinkie a day, you don't notice it. a box of Twinkies and you're sick to your stomach.
And a box of Twinkies every hour, imagine.
Exactly.
I mean, just listening to that news montage, I was literally feeling something in the pit of my stomach.
That's right. I saw Holly start rubbing her tummy and I started rubbing my head. Okay, so that's what starts to happen and people don't realize they're on a steady diet of crap.
So wait, what do you say, though, to the what I've heard people say, which is, listen, we get the media that we want. We get the media that we deserve.
No, that is so inaccurate.
Okay, just tell me why not.
We're getting the meat. We're being spoon-fed. And what's happening now with people, we're so busy. We're not getting what we want. We're getting what we've been too busy and too desensitized to change. And that's what this film is about. The film is actually a stop sign. Stop. Stop what you were doing. We know you're busy. We know you're busy raising children. We know you're busy working. We know you're busy doing great things. Stop. You must stop and take time. It's called the power of a pause. The power of the pause. People, let's go back to that. We don't have to be busy 24/7. Let's take time to think. Let's take time to gather in our kitchens, kitchen salons. Talk to your girlfriends. Talk to your fellow classmates. Talk to your teachers. Talk to your people around you, men and women. This is not just a gender thing. Start talking and stop and listen and wake up. We can make these changes. We're not getting what we want, actually. Yeah. We just haven't taken the time to say we don't want that, and we have our rights. We know what we want, and our children deserve better, and we deserve better, and we can make these changes.
And that's a few things
Just one second. That's Regina Kulik-Scully. She's executive producer of Misrepresentation. I'm going to let you get in there. I believe that's you, Gigi.
Yeah.
But I think that I just want to underscore a point that that Regina just made, which is that this is not a male-female issue. This is something that goes beyond gender and that we really have to think of holistically. So go ahead, Gigi. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to add that I think the film makes a very good point about this. If you stop to do sort of a careful economic analysis of the media, the great myth is that they're giving the people what they want. But in truth, as Regina is saying, these are all sort of very carefully orchestrated campaigns that are tied to a complicated economic system where the media make most of their revenues from the advertisers, you know, who
That's right.
sell their products via the media. And so these are multi-billion dollar industries, and media targeted to women are predicated. They depend for their revenues on fashion advertising, makeup advertising, and so on. And so there's such a symbiotic relationship between the images that are in the media and the advertisers' goals of selling those kinds of products. And so, of course, you see these unrealistic bodies that require, you know, intense diet aids and,
Or they're literally airbrushed so that it's not even possible to attain that.
It's not even possible, but the illusion is that if you buy these products, you can attain that body. And so, I mean, it's all tied to this enormous amounts of consumerism. So it's not about giving people what they want. I mean, and when companies have made incremental progressive changes, women have responded, tremendously. Right. So the Dove Beauty campaign, for example, or Eileen Fisher, who tends to use older models. I mean, women respond to those things. So it's, you know, when you see little movements in progressive directions, it's not like they lose money.
Well, right. Thank you for that, Gigi. Listen, we've got so many callers. I want to get them in. I want to read two emails. Carolyn wrote, I'm so glad you're addressing this subject. As the mother of two daughters, now college age, I've been appalled by the way things have changed for young women. In particular, it's extremely difficult to go against the rising tide of early sexualization of young girls. Even though as a parent you can stave this off by insisting on your rules for your household, one is ultimately faced with the high school years and peer pressure. I can say from experience that peer pressure eventually wins out. She goes on to say, what I'd like to have addressed on your show, if possible, is why some parents can cave in and look the other way if their girls are dressing and behaving as though they were in their 20s, and why some parents are allowing young children to watch media that is clearly targeted to an older age. I'd also like to recommend the book Female Chauvinistic Pigs. Mm-hmm. It talks about the current state of young girls. Another email from Shoshana says, I'm a member of the Betty Friedan generation, and I raised three daughters, mostly without their fathers being present. I kept TV out of my house and kept the women's empowerment on the front burner, but both through words and actions. I cooked healthy meals and never dieted, thus my healthy, somewhat rounded form, which mimics that of my aunts and grandmothers. However, all my adult daughters are completely body obsessed. Television and its absurd images are constantly on in their homes. They talk constantly of weight and appearance at quite a superficial level. Two are mothers of daughters, and I do have concerns for the environment their girls are being raised in. I will join Misrepresentation It's .org, right?
Yes.
Misrepresentation.org. Yes. But is this enough? I've long noticed how a teenage girl is expected to wear clothes at least one size too small, while the boys go around in baggy body hiding garments. Who runs the fashion industry? Thanks for this program. Now let's go to Suzanne in Berkeley. Welcome to your call, Suzanne.
Hi. Thank you so much for a really interesting and relevant show. And my question or my comment is really for Damanshi Patel at Stanford. Damanshi, I'm the mom of a nearly 12-year-old girl who's always been newer mind and I think shows a lot of leadership potential. But I found that at school she's always characterized as talking too much or being overly assertive. And I think the stereotypes around these behaviors, you know, what's acceptable, well, what's rewarded even at school, it seems to be a passive kind of female role even now. And I was interested to hear that at Stanford, I guess in the student government, you've seldom had any leadership by young women. And it starts really early, you know, all these messages about how much input somebody can have even in the classroom. So I wondered if the panel could comment on that. Again, you know, leadership needs to start early, but it has to be supported, and it does require, you know, breaking out of these kind of rewarded passive behavior.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear from Damanshi. Are you still with us? Damanshi Patel from Stanford?
Hi.
Yeah. So can you answer, Suzanne?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for your question. Well, first off, if your daughter is as you say, 12 years old, middle school is definitely one of the most difficult times for young women, especially women trying to assert their leadership. I remember when I was in middle school, I was running for student council and I was putting myself out there. And a lot of the feedback was kind of the same. She talks too much. She likes to hear herself speak. She, you know, all of these characteristics like assertiveness or decision making that are valued qualities in men for leadership are looked down upon for women. And studies have shown this again and again that what we define as being a prime leadership quality are most often qualities that we associate with masculinity. So I think the biggest change and the shift in order to get more women in leadership is to redefine what we see as leadership. Mm. So studies have shown that women excel at consensus building or other skills that are extremely useful in leadership and consensus building, looking to other people for opinion, seeking advice. And all of these things are often what characterize women as weak and undecisive, but we need to see those as very valuable qualities for leadership, and only then can we begin to identify great women who are leaders and to begin to build more women leaders, especially from younger ages.
And Damanshi, let me ask you about something that you mentioned and a few people have mentioned, which is this kind of middle school paradox where girls who had been very strong and bold in grade school reach middle school and puberty and seem to sort of wither up inside of themselves, or I know that this was my own experience. How did you buck that trend, and what did you see happening among your peers?
Well, definitely middle school and high school are very different times, and even though they're so close to each other in age and they seem to be not too far apart, they're very different in the way the school culture, school environment, and even how the biology and psychology of puberty play a role in that. In my experience, middle school was a great time for me just because I went to a really supportive school where a lot of strong women were at the forefront. However, I felt the biggest backlash not from men and not from my male fellow students, but from other female students. And this is, I think, what we begin to teach our youngest of girls, is that in order to be successful, they have to be the only one who is successful. And this is extremely dangerous, not only in grade school and middle school, but it continues. Because there are so few women in leadership positions, and because there are so few women who we can see as being models that we can emulate, there's this need that people put into us in order to compete. And, you know, misrepresentation talks about this, that from a very young age, women are told that we need to be pitted against each other, and it's either it's me or it's no one. And that's extremely dangerous. We need to move from that to a more collaborative environment where we can mentor each other, mentor women who are younger than us, and seek mentorship from women who are older than us and have gone through these experiences.
And that's Devanshi Patel. She's a sophomore at Stanford University. She's also featured in the film Misrepresentation, which is what we're talking about today. I'm Holly Kernan. You're listening to Your Call. And let's go to Victoria in Watsonville. Hi, Victoria.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
I am an ordained Roman Catholic woman priest, and I was immediately excommunicated. There are 100 of us in the United States. And the Roman Catholic Church, as you know, is controlled entirely by men. It's a global church. And I believe that when women are ordained, eventually, when the Vatican chooses to open its door, all the boats will rise across the world. So I don't want to leave out of this conversation role models in terms of religion.
Well, and role models in terms of everything seem to be a real key point here. I mean, I know that as a parent, what you think of is modeling, right? That's the way you're trying to show your daughter what is possible in the world. Thank you so much for calling, Victoria. Let me read a couple of emails. Lori writes, thank you so much for this program. This discussion should be louder and more frequent. You can go to misrepresentation.org to continue the conversation. You can also continue online at yourcallradio.org, where we'll have links to everything that we're talking about today. Lori also says, the fear of the true range of the feminine is abroad and in the world. We also got an email from Sheila. Women have always been objectified and looked down upon and will continue to be so as long as the patriarchal system exists in this country. With the religious right in full control of so much of our media, it's no surprise that the attack on women has become much more virulent these last 30 years. I'd like to see the conversation begin to look at the underlying issue that drives all of the above, patriarchy. So actually, I'm going to bring in a call that seems to be relevant. Peter in Hollister, welcome to your call.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. I've said for many times, I have three nieces, and you know, they're in varying ages from ages 11 to 27. And I, you know, I want all of them to have every opportunity that they deserve, and I don't want it to necessarily be predicated on the way that they look or don't look. But at the same time, I'm also wondering, you know, I'm aware that as a male, just as anybody is, I'm vulnerable to images that are put out there by advertisers and other images that are, quote, you know, this is what is desirable, this is what's sexy or whatever. But I'm also wondering how much of this is actually just our instinct, what we find attractive. Is there any information about that? I'd like to hear from your panel if there's some information or research has been done to study this and kind of quantify what is the level that males are naturally attracted to certain types, as opposed to what we're being told.
How much is manufactured? How much is biological? Peter,
yes,
can you stay on the line? Let's go ahead, Gigi.
I can answer that question since I teach classes in gender and sexuality in the
great
media.
Great question.
So, I mean, the one thing that we need to be aware of, I think, first, is that historically, standards of what constitutes a beautiful woman's body or desirability for women have changed vastly over the years. And so if you go back to the time of Rubens, for example, the kind of body that we would consider to be obese or corpulent these days was actually considered highly desirable, right? So you have to look at the fact that there have been always shifts. And as one of the callers said, you know, these standards were almost always determined by powerful men. So you know, I think the fact that it's not a constant challenges the idea of some biological instinct for a particular type of body, right? So, you know, the bodies we see today would probably have been considered grotesque, you know, in the 16th century, these very, very thin bodies with enormous breasts and bulging muscles. So, you know, I think the first thing to do is think about them as a cultural, social construction. One of the points that I make in my book is that the Barbie body that's our ideal right now is a body that's completely profit-driven. I mean, you have to engage in sort of borderline starvation, plastic surgeries, you know, you have to join gyms to make them, you know, to develop those kinds of muscles. You usually have to take diet aids, and you have to, consume lots of different kinds of makeup and bleach your hair. And so it's a body that's geared to consumerism rather than, you know, responding to any type of instinct or desire. And I think that's just the first point one can make about this.
Well, Gigi, let me ask all of you about something else that Peter brought up, which is, you know, how much of this can what can men do? What can men do to be part of this?
I mean, not to monopolize this discussion, I don't want to, but very quickly, I just want to say that I always have men when I in the audience when I give talks, and my book, The Lolita Effect, has been really sort of warmly received by people who men who work with children and fathers and so on, and so I think a number of men are very interested in these issues for the same reasons that women are, and you know, because they want better, you know, better society for everyone, and particular for their own daughters and so on. So I think men are and can be completely involved in this.
Absolutely. And
Regina, yeah.
I just like to add that, you know, as I said before, fathers are a very big part of what we're doing in our movement. I mean, we have started a movement, and some of our fathers are the most adamant in this caller. I just, Peter, thank you for calling in. And I have nephews and brothers, and we care just as equally about bringing them along on this dialogue and conversation. We need their voice, and we need their consumer choices, too. We need for men to boycott certain products. We need for men not to, to say, no, I don't like that beer commercial. You know, and I'm not going to buy that beer because I have a daughter and I have nieces, and it just makes them look ridiculous. So
and to talk with their boys in the same way we're trying to talk with our girls,
exactly,
about sort of talking back to the media, having a critical construction of
exactly.
Of this.
So again, voting with their dollar and also changing the conversation, like you said, speaking to their sons as well as their daughters and saying, you know what, you did that really well, validating their daughters and nieces, you know, their critical thinking, showing them that critical thinking is just as valuable as how they look. You know, the other thing too, just adding to what Gigi said, you know, we're not ignoring the fact, first of all, we're not even telling women to ignore their beauty. Beauty is a big part of, women should celebrate their bodies and their beauty. We are not against, there's a big difference between sexy and sexism.
Right.
So we're not, you know, we have to be careful. It's a fine line and nuances of discussion. So we're also aware that we're up against 10,000 years of biology here. Women, we are the ones who make the babies, okay? We are the ones who breastfeed. We are the ones who, the gestation period is 9 months to give life, right? So we're aware of all of that, too. That's a lot, too. We're up against a lot here.
Well, so, we can celebrate that, too.
Absolutely. It should all be celebrated. But it's really about changing the way our minds are viewing things, perceptions, the way we think. And it starts with younger generations, and it's all about education, education, education.
Mm-hmm. And very quickly, I just want to add, too, that there is a difference between sexualization, which is harmful and objectifying and damaging, mm-hmm, and healthy sexuality.
Absolutely.
Right? So, I mean, we're not you know, devaluing women's sexuality. That's a wonderful thing and a fantastic part of being a human being. So, but it's the fact that sexuality can be expressed in lots of different ways, and beauty can be enormously diverse, and that's what we need to.
Great addition to the conversation. Thank you, Gigi and Regina. We just have so many callers and so little time.
Go ahead, let's go
to Laura in Burlingame. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for this conversation. It's really, really good to hear on the radio. I just wanted to make a comment about that radio clip you guys played.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out that I was hearing a lot about this media portrayal and physical characteristics of women, but underneath the surface, I was also hearing a lot of misogyny and how not only are women portrayed and only focused on, you know, what they look like, but on top of that, then all of these men politicians and spokespeople and even women tend to then turn that against women and say, look, this is why they're not worthy, because mm-hmm, all they focus on is their looks, mm-hmm, and how it creates sort of this hatred for women and this hatred for all things feminine that then, I mean, I work with the Domestic Violence Agency, and so it's just, mm-hmm, so pervasive and insidious that you convince women that they have to look a certain way, and then you hate them for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Laura, thank you so much for calling in. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're running out of time, and I really want to get to some solutions here. In the movie, it says, remember that a girl is watching you, and how might that change the way you behave? And Kate McGinnis writes in the Women's Media Center, using the power of our pocketbooks and social media, we have the ability to discourage the publication of advertisements that objectify women or depict violence against women. So use Twitter to register your revulsion. Post a photo or a description of the ad on Twitter with the hashtag not buying it. Follow the power of Margaret Mead's words. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever had. So let's go to solutions. What advice do you have for our listeners? How do we challenge this? And where do you see good things happening? Let's start with Devanshi.
I definitely think that being on the college level and being on the brink of a new generation, that there's a lot
to, there's a lot to say about what's available to us now that wasn't in the past. And one thing I really believe in is the power of social media, and I really admire the way that misrepresentation harnesses social media in order to really get a strong message across. The entire film is about how pervasive media is, and it's only going to get more pervasive. So changing the dialogue and changing the conversation within the spheres of media is very important.
Great. Thank you, Devonchi. I'm going to go to Gigi because we only have, you get 30 seconds, Gigi.
Coalition building and my own research. I've done ethnography with middle school girls, and all the ones who were like Devonchi told me that some adults sat down with them and talked to them about these things and sort of, you know, helped them develop a feminist consciousness. And so even if you think kids aren't listening, they are.
Thank you so much. And Regina, you get the last word here.
Okay, thank you. It's all about raising our consciousness, having these conversations. Your radio talk show is incredible. Thank you for doing that. And education. If you're listening to this show, try to get it into 5 schools that you know of, schools that can't afford it or can afford it. Buy the DVD for them. It's $195 for the education value. Go to missorganization.org and order an educational DVD and donate it to your school, to the one that your child goes to, or one that you just know is in your neighborhood. It's about spreading the word. It's about getting these conversations going.
And we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Regina Kulik-Scully. She is the executive producer of Misrepresentation. Meenakshi Gigi Durham is professor in the School of Journalism at the University of Iowa. She's the author of The Lolita Effect, Why the Media Sexualize Young Girls and What You Can Do About It. We also spoke with Devonchi Patel. She's a sophomore at Stanford University. She first ran for office in 4th grade. She is now leading women's leadership development on the Stanford University campus. And we're going to put a link to all of the web resources at our new website, which is yourcallradio.org. You can find all about how to host a screening of Misrepresentation, host a screening at a school in your neighborhood. And it's also where you can continue this conversation. So go ahead and continue talking about it. I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody's calls. yourcallradio.org. And I thank all of our guests. I thank you for your calls. And I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. How is the Occupy movement radicalizing college campuses and beyond? On the Next Year Call, we'll talk about how global events are inspiring political action. Tomorrow, protesters in support of Occupy Education will begin a 99-mile march to the Capitol building in Sacramento. What event encouraged you to get politically involved? Join us at 10 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Is there a moment that galvanized you to move from the sidelines into action? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also friend us on Facebook. Ali Budner and Malihe Razazan produce the show. Matt Martin is executive producer. Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Alan Farley is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.